Hello there. I'm Bill DeYoung. Once again, it's Arts Alive, the arts podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Mr. Mike Hazlett, who is the proprietor, owner, operator, and popcorn popper over there at Greenlight Cinema. Hey, Mike.
How are you? Good to see you.
Are you the only individual screen independent theater in St. Petersburg?
Oh, yeah.
Full time,
yeah.
Right? I mean, other people can throw a sheet up.
Yeah, we're at, I mean, really, I mean, if you think of the whole Tampa area, it's us in the Tampa Theater.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You and your wife, so you came from Boston?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay, so you've been here a few years.
Yeah, we've been here about 9 years.
Okay, and the theater is 2020. I want to do the work up to that.
Yeah.
What's your background, Mike? I mean, what were you doing before you did this?
So I had a long career running theaters in New England, like performing art theater. So in 1992, I walked into a theater called the Music Hall in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. 900-seater, built in 1878. Mm. And I fell in love, and I didn't leave for 7 years. And that's kind of where I learned the whole thing. And that's also where I ended up booking films for the first time. And then I went to a big theater in Portland, Maine, a 2,000-seater, and I ran that for about 8 years.
So you're running theaters, and you're talking concerts and plays all that.
We were doing, the whole thing, national acts, the whole thing.
The whole bit. Yeah, I mean, I know a number of people who do that now.
Yep.
How did you focus in on films? Are you a film nut? And one day I'd like to do this. It was a different world in the 90s.
Totally. Well, it's funny because it's the same, but it's different, right? It's like the same kind of deal structure where it's, you know, you're paying a percentage and you're negotiating individual films with individual distributors. But what's changed is the streaming stuff has come in and just really messed this business up.
Well, I can remember.
Theatrical.
What was it in the 1980s or something, when like HBO and Cinemax and all that started happening? And that's the death knell of cinema, but it really wasn't.
Blockbuster. Remember Blockbuster?
Of course there was, right?
So what's happened is, and this is really the most challenging part of running Greenlight, is that, you know, we are attached to an industry that has not recovered from COVID.
Yeah.
And the streaming platforms are kind of cannibalizing theatrical. They can't find the balance between leaving these films in the theaters and putting them on these streaming platforms. And it's a big problem.
It's all about money, right?
It's always
how they're going to monetize. Best monetize their product.
And they're not doing it correctly. They're not. They're leaving money on the table at the theaters, and none of the streaming platforms make any money. Netflix is the only streaming platform that makes money, and that's because they have 300 million subscribers.
Well, it's funny. I spoke with John Lovitz this week, and we were talking about he's got a cameo in Happy Gilmore too.
Yep.
You know, I went and just as due diligence looked it up, and it's opening on Netflix in July or something. So that's different.
It's a problem. It's a big problem. Mm-hmm. And it's funny when you bring up Netflix because the film Emilia Perez came out this year, 2024.
Yeah.
And it was a Netflix film. And I'm like, you know what? I am going to track this film down. So I track down the head of theatrical at Netflix, and I find out. So I send her an email, and she writes back to me, and she's like, oh, I know all about you guys. I'm like, what are you talking about? Wow. Little green.
My eyebrows are raised at the moment.
So she goes, yeah, my sister owns Saigon Blonde. I'm in town all the time. I was like, cool, you know? So we got the film. The problem is that when Netflix goes to the theater, they just go for one reason, and that's to be eligible for awards. You have to be in theaters for 2 weeks in 10 major markets to be eligible for Oscars and the big awards.
Well, that works for you, doesn't it? I mean, we got it for 2 weeks or whatever.
We did, but they're not behind the film. They're not promoting the film. Mm. They're not putting money into social media. They're not really building out those grand things you see for Marvel and all of that. And so, and it's a 2 week, you know, it's a very short window. I think the biggest problem is that people, the general public, is just confused, right? Is it in theaters? How long is it going to be in theaters? Is it on a streaming platform? Do I have the streaming platform? Is it video on demand? Do I have to pay for it? How long do I have to pay for it? When does it get to Amazon? And it just creates real chaos in the business.
In the midst of all this, You opened in 2020, and we'll talk about the pandemic and all. Yeah, we were all here at the same time. In the midst of all this, though, why open an independent cinema? To me, it sounds like, boy, that's a classic example of I'm shooting myself in the foot here. What a messed up business. Why did you do it?
Well, this was pre-COVID when we were conceiving it, right? And the idea was, you know, I come down from Boston and my wife and I are walking around the city and I'm like, why isn't there an independent movie theater in this city?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to be the perfect connection. And so we, you know, we did all the due diligence and we started the thing and we just got caught up in the worst timing ever. You know, and then, you know,
what did you say it was January of 2020?
January 2020.
Oh, God.
We didn't open until November of 2020 because everything was shut down. Right. And if you remember, I only put in 50 seats initially because we were trying the social distance thing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Remember this?
I do remember that. Yeah.
So I had 50 seats and I could only sell half because of the regulations or whatever with social distancing and COVID. So I open a movie theater with a capacity of 25.
And we're taking COVID out of the equation for a minute. I mean, were people sort of reticent about what is this? Why do we – did you have to educate the public on what you were doing?
Yeah, that was a layer that I didn't see.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Boston. And one of the things that's –
Hey, what does that mean, because I'm from Boston?
Well, because we grew up with independent movie theaters.
Oh, yeah, because they're so hip in Boston.
Right, you know what I mean? We had independent movie theaters. So people come in and they're like, what is this? They don't, you know, I still get that today where I'm having to kind of explain what it is. And so, you know, it has been challenging. And then also in this, we've been, so 2021 was our first full year.
Yeah.
We averaged 100 tickets a week for a year. Brutal.
How are you still here?
I work a lot, Bill. I work a lot. You know, so we just kind of, so that's why I went in other directions, right? And we brought in Eugenie, and Eugenie does her acting studio, and it's a huge success. It's a really, really wonderful thing that we've done.
She's been doing that there how long?
Going on 3 years.
So I remember when, it's so funny. This only a couple of years ago when Andy Matheny was here.
Right.
Eugenie was teaching there. Eugenie leaves. Ward Smith buys Eugenie's studio, and that's what the Off Central is. And Eugenie comes to Greenlight to teach acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that keep you afloat for a while?
It was a huge help.
Wow.
I mean, it was a steady revenue stream.
Yeah.
You know, and we're doing now. I mean, we're you know, signing up for classes now. We're expanding the number of classes, and we're doing really, really big classes, like really good stuff. And this community that we're building with these acting students, and we get them from age 80 to 18. It's been the best thing that we've done. The thing with Eugenie has definitely been the best thing that we've done as far as a collaboration.
Okay, but as far as an independent single screen theater, things got better.
They got better. It's really complicated. So 2021 goes by. It's 100 tickets a week. Then we have two strikes over the last 3 years, which just disrupt production and it disrupts distribution. And you have on top of that the streaming wars that are going on. And so if you look at the national numbers for the theatrical business, we have lost 25% of the audience permanently. It's gone. That's what the numbers reflect. Last year, the movie theater business sold 15% of its potential tickets. I mean...
Is this all due to streaming?
No. I think COVID...
People aren't kind scared of, to go out anymore.
No, I think what happened is that COVID kind of took off, you know, kind of exposed a lot of kind of structural issues within theatrical, you know, even before COVID. I mean, it was hanging in there. The real problem is there's too many theaters. There's too many screens. People go to AMC and they feel like they're getting ripped off or the chains, right? And it's not the best experience. So that's kind of... the environment that we've been working out of. And you know, we kind of clear our own path in a lot of ways, right? We're community based. We lean into the audience. We listen to the audience. Mm-hmm. We play a lot of local films.
I remember you asked me once. I said, "Hey, you got to get this one film," and you did. And I think you said nobody came. I didn't even come. You
know? Well, no, that was
the Guy Clark movie.
Guy Clark, the music stuff does okay. No, this was the abortion film that I did called Happening. And I couldn't get anybody to come.
Well, that wasn't mine.
No, that wasn't yours.
I mean, I'm not taking any flack for that one.
Well, I mean, but, so what happens with distribution now is that, you know, January, February, March, we kill it because we are in award season. So right. We're doing, you know, Oscar shorts. We kill with Oscar shorts. Then we get into the middle 6 months of the year. And that's challenging, and it's especially challenging when the strikes were kicking in, and there were no films to pick from, and I'm picking a couple of layers down, you know, obscure French films that no one's ever heard of.
But it makes you look cool.
It makes me look cool, but it doesn't put butts in the seats. Yes.
80 seats now, is it?
80 seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask a couple of questions specifically about programming, because it would seem to me, and. Just playing devil's advocate, right? Just playing the great unwashed representative, which I do so well, by the way, that it could be infinitely cheaper, wouldn't it, to make it a second-run movie house or do films that are fully digitized that you can show from 2 years ago? Or remember the 2018 Best Picture winners?
I mean, you could do that.
Cheaper?
It's not that much cheaper.
Really?
It's really not. The cheapest you're going to get a film – especially if you do an extended kind of a 3 or 4 or 5 day run, you're going to pay 35%. That's kind of minimum industry standard. So if I sell a $10 ticket and you're representing Warner Brothers and I'm showing a 20-year-old Warner Brothers film, you're going to get $3.50 out of that. Now, if I go and get Wicked the first week it comes out,
yeah,
I'm paying 80% back. So that's kind so, and like a new film, I just booked a film today called On Swift Horses, which is coming from Sony. I'm going to get it the first week it comes out, and I pay 50%. So it's not a huge difference between a new film and you're going to be paying for rep.
And if you paid that 80% for Wicked, then you're up against the multiplexes and IMAX and great big booming stereo hyperdrive sound and all that stuff.
And it's also the reason why when you go to AMC, they charge you $16 for a bucket of popcorn because they're not making any money on the tickets.
Wow.
That's the reality of this business. And so
I got to keep asking you, why do you still do it? You know.
I'll tell you this.
Why not go open a farm somewhere?
Well, no. It's interesting.
Food truck,
right?
Or something.
I was thinking about you and this conversation. And movie theaters are kind of where the music business was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Remember when the music business went to streaming and you couldn't sell albums or CDs anymore?
And everybody was like a headless chicken running around.
Then they were all running around like lunatics. And that's when ticket prices went from $20 to $100, right?
Yeah.
Bookstores. 15 years ago, Amazon destroyed bookstores in this country. I mean, Barnes & Noble went bankrupt, right?
Yeah.
Now look at Tombolo. Look what they're doing. Great. And it's regional. It's community-based. It's for you're having an ongoing conversation with the people who buy your product all the time. That's where the model of what I do is going to go. We are in the chaos right now, and it's going to get better. And we just stay in our lane, do what we do, and slowly build the audience. And that's the way to do it.
Let's talk about staying in your lane, because what we're doing is we're talking about independent films. We're talking about award-winning film. We're not talking about Spider-Man 12.
No.
And all of that sort of thing. That's another side of the business.
It's
entirely
a whole different thing. That's a different business model.
So this is how you – there is an audience for this.
We do – I have a very narrow window of what I can book, right? Like I have a film coming on April 4th called The Friend. Naomi Watts, Bill Murray, and a 200-pound Great Dane named Bing. And I saw the film. I said, there's a dog. I'm booking that film.
Oh, wow. It was the Bing effect.
It's the Bing effect, right? I mean, I did a film called Oh my God, it was an Irish film about a guy who died and comes back as a dog for his wife. And
the dog film sell? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. I'm just going to play dog films from now on. But they do, you know? And so it's like this weird, you have to find a hook. You have to find something that'll drive the audience, right? And that trailer I'm going to show for the next month in front of every film that I play. And people are going to go, oh, you know? And then that'll translate well for April 4th.
Bing. I tell
Bing,
you what.
Bing the dog.
I smell a story in my future. You know? So we were talking about Boston, say, and other big metropolitan cities like that. Don't you develop a specific audience that wants to see the latest French film or the latest award winner from, you know, Belgium or Iraq or something?
I mean, I think...
Can you do that here?
I think what you want is you are going to... What you want to get is to a place where people will see, who follow us, will say, I don't know what that film is, but Green Light's showing it. So we're going to go take a chance at it.
There you go.
That's... And, you know, we do that to a certain extent. But again, it's a kind of narrow window. And it's really hard to get consistency with programming when... You know, like I get a call from a distributor and my first thing is, when is it streaming? That's the first question that we now deal with, right? And this is a perfect example of what's happened in this industry. The new Wes Anderson film is coming out in June or July, whatever. And we had French Dispatch 3 years ago. We killed with it. And then the one right after that, which I can never remember the name of, they switched distributors. They went to Focus, which is a Disney, is owned by Disney, you know. Their philosophy on theatrical is you go into theaters for 17 days, 3 weekends, and then you're in streaming. And if I can't get the film in that 17 days, and they wouldn't give it to me because I'm not AMC or Regal or whatever, I'm up against the streaming platforms, and I won't do it. You know, you might take a chance if it's on Apple because it's a smaller, you know, profile. But it absolutely, and the thing is, we're talking about Wes Anderson, right? The one of the ultimate independent movie directors. That film should be in theaters for 3 months minimum.
He's an auteur.
He is.
Absolutely.
And so what they're doing is they're kind of destroying that a little bit. And it all comes from fear. Right. Because the theatrical business has taken a $30 billion hit in the last 4.5 years. Fear and chaos. And it's still kind of running this business. And I'm trying to maneuver that and swim through that and put butts in the seats.
Well,
it's challenging.
For all the people out there who think that what Mike does at Greenlight is easy.
Right.
I hope you're listening. This is something you battle with every day, right? I mean, you must wake up and say, I don't know if I can get that thing I want.
Every day I spend a lot of time fighting. And one of the things that we do, too, it's like I had a little experience in this. I booked films in you know, the late 90s. And a lot of times what you'll have is these distributors will come in, especially the bigger ones like Sony or A24. Yeah. They will be, well, we'll give you the film, but you have to give it to us for 2 weeks minimum, and you can't show anything else, and that's the deal. And I'm like, no.
No.
I'm not going to do it.
That's not.
I will not do it.
And doesn't make any business sense at all. For them, it does.
Well, but it doesn't, because now they've lost me. And one of the things that we do really well is if I get the film, this is the absolute truth. If I just played the Oscar shorts for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And there were about 25 theaters in the state of Florida showing the Oscar shorts. We were number one. We do it all the time. I'm not playing Wicked or, you know, Superman 12 or whatever. I'm playing smaller films. Greenlight generally sells more tickets than any theater in the state of Florida. That's the dichotomy that I'm dealing with, right? Which is...
And you're still not rich.
No.
I love making this guy laugh. I'm sorry.
No, I mean that's the thing, right? So you look at the numbers and you say, okay, good luck. Oh, great for Greenlight. Look at those guys.
Yeah.
But we're doing it in the context of a business that has just lost its footing and is down 25 to 35% from 2019.
Some of the benefits are many, and some of them for me include, I think it was Moon Age Daydream that I saw at Greenlight. And that sort of thing. I don't want to see that on streaming. I want to hear that thing. And it was really loud. Thank you, Mike. Blasting.
Yeah.
The David Bowie film is what we're talking about. That sort of thing, you don't get that experience.
You do not.
I don't have a, what is it, how big is your screen? 20,
it's,
30,
yeah, it's 40? 20 by 8
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than my TV.
And in this, in that room, it looks huge, right?
Yeah,
because it's like that
it's,
whole wall.
It's the wall.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So there are certain films for which that experience is essential, I think, you know.
That's, you know, it's really interesting because we do a thing called a VHS Club. Which is kind of weirdo 80s stuff on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Saturday night is the hardest night to get an audience in St. Pete.
Hmm.
I know. Completely counterintuitive. And so I do a lot of event stuff on Saturday night because it's easier if you build an event and we're having fun and trivia and free popcorn or whatever.
Yeah.
But if I do the VHS Club, we'll do stuff like The Thing and Die Hard at Christmas and stuff like that. I get these kids, like the 18 to 25-year-olds are like – the toughest audience to engage because they're
as in life, right?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
But they because they witness or they experience content in on their phones.
Yeah.
So we get them in there and we put Die Hard on that screen and we crank it up on that 7.1 surround and they're blown away.
Yeah.
Right? They have that
That's
experience.
The experience they haven't
That's it.
And yeah. My children, you know, my son, who's going to be 40 this year, you know, will always remind me, you know, Dad, when I was, you know, 5, you took me to see Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yep.
And he never forgot being in the middle of that, of those great, loud, explosive, funny moments.
Yep. You got to just, it's so funny because when we first opened, it was so, I said I was like the Maytag repairman. I was the loneliest guy in St. Pete for a year. Like literally, and the running joke at Greenlight was like we're gaining customers one at a time. Like they would walk in, hey, how are you? Thanks for coming. Blah 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 blah. We're almost kind of circled back to that because you have to engage people and you have to kind of talk to them and make them feel like they're being listened to and they're having fun and you joke with them and whatever. And there's so much more value to that than putting stuff on Instagram and Facebook. And we do that. But it's really the connection that you make when folks walk through the door.
Yeah, in a way, it's like Floyd's barbershop.
It totally is. You know,
hey, man. Hey, Mike. What's going
on? That's it.
And every time I see you, you're telling me about something cool that's coming.
I'd like to
fast forward here into the end of the present tense and talk about No Other Land, which is either opens tonight or it's coming this
weekend.
Yeah, it's
starting this weekend. It starts on Saturday. So
on Saturday.
It's Saturday night.
Talk to us about that film.
Here's a perfect film that gives you a glimpse into what's going on in the world of the movie business.
Mm-hmm.
This film won an Oscar 3 weeks ago. It does not have a film distributor.
Tell us why, Mike.
Well, it's a slightly controversial film, though it is a collaboration between Palestinian and Jews together. So they're trying
Israel-Palestine, like, cohab or whatever.
They're trying to find some common ground.
Yeah.
The other issue is that the one genre that was really wiped out by COVID and the streaming services are docs.
Hmm.
It's really hard to get docs into a theatrical setting because the streaming platforms will overpay to buy those films. And I think my theory on this is because I think they have a longer shelf life on a streaming platform. In other words, there isn't this thing where you have to be able to see this thing in the first 3 weeks or it just falls into the ether.
Sure.
So I'm playing an Oscar-winning film. I'm dealing directly with the filmmakers. They just want an Oscar, you know? And so we're bringing this film in and, you know, we haven't had any pushback, but this film has gotten some this place over Miami is in a big fight right now over whether they're going to exist because they had the guts to show this film. And this is not a it's not polemical. It's not. It's just kind of a
I can see that. It's made both sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and it starts Saturday.
Saturday night.
This won what best foreign language film? Best documentary.
It won best documentary.
Best documentary.
2025. Yeah.
Wow.
No. It doesn't. You know, and it's interesting too because We played a film last year called Hundreds of Beavers, which is
okay.
The greatest title ever.
Well, yeah.
Right. And but this guy, and it's a crazy film. It's like a Warner Brothers cartoon, only it's live action with a Canadian beaver hunter being chased by hundreds of guys in beaver outfits.
And I would say that next to No Other Land, this is the must-see film of the year.
So this film, black and white, no dialogue, and he couldn't get film distribution, so he decided to do it himself. And the guy has grossed a couple of million dollars because people love the film. And he called me up directly, and he goes, "I'm going to send you some stuff. Take a look at it. Play it. If you could sell some tickets, you play more." And we played it for a couple of weeks, and people had a blast. And so that may be a glimpse into how we get films on the big screen in the future. Just go around the distributors. We'll see.
Well, as long as it doesn't become like direct IV between you and TikTok or something, then I'm not coming anymore, I got to tell you. Let's talk about Greenlight Cinema, which is at 221 2nd Avenue North.
Yeah.
Kind of sandwiched between a bunch of things, but it's definitely, and they've actually got parking, which is a blessing.
Right across from American Stage.
That's right, it is.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what I was going to say. It's greenlightstpete.com. That's what I was going to say. Yes. I was trying to remember the website and my brain just malfunctioned, which it tends to do. It's 80 seats now, right?
80 seats.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, so it's the thing that keeps me going is that, and I think I always think, and this goes back to what I was thinking about you when I'm thinking about this, is like the music business, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The music business destroyed 20 years ago, da 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 da. Great art is still being made, whether it's music. There are great films, Bill.
That's the point of why I think we're both here.
Yeah. I am showing some amazing films, and I'm trying to pull the audience kicking and screaming into seeing something that has a different point of view, or shows a different culture, or might be in a different language. And because there is just some amazing stuff that's being made, and people should see these films.
And I think in answer to the question from long ago, why don't you just become what they call a second-run theater and just show old favorites? It's like, well, that's nice. A, you probably wouldn't make a ton of money, and B, it'd be boring as hell.
It would be boring. Yeah. And I think that people like the idea of, oh, look, they're going to show Jaws or whatever. It doesn't always translate to ticket sales, you know? And you got to kind of be strategic with that stuff. Like this summer, we're going to do 4 weeks in June and July where we do kind of rep. So we're going to show Christopher Nolan's Batman films in July. We're thinking about doing an anti-fascist week. So we may do Inglourious Basterds and Jojo Rabbit and maybe How I Love the Bomb, you know, the Kubrick film.
Oh, Dr. Strangelove.
Dr. Strangelove, sorry. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just because you sometimes there are certain times of the year where you have to be more creative and strategic. And so we're going to try that. I mean, that's part of the thing about Greenlight is all of the headwinds that we faced, and at the same time, we're trying to build a history. Like, we don't know what worked. We're throwing stuff on the screen. You know what I mean?
And
what is, like we were talking before we started this, what's the rhythm of the city, right? We the last 4 weekends, we've had Localtopia, the Reggae Fest, the Grand Prix.
The Grand Prix. I mean, let us not forget the Grand Prix.
Exactly, yeah. You know? And so you got to kind of get a feel for it all. And we're doing that in the context of a business that's really not remotely where it was.
What do you see down the line? Can you sort of look into the future, Karnak, and say it's going to get better? Or is there just no idea? I mean, streaming.
There's a simple,
I didn't see streaming coming.
There's a simple solution to this. Or there's something that can be done immediately that would make an impact. And that is to put back the theatrical window, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When we were younger, you wouldn't be able to get a film at Blockbuster
for six months. 6 months, yeah.
6 months or a year,
you know?
And now it's 17 days.
Yeah.
And you can do it by doing this while you're sitting on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if they put in a 30 or 45-day window where you cannot – it's exclusively theatrical, that would be a help. Because at least it would then clear the air a little bit about how long these films are going to be in that certain format.
And I think one of the ideas that appeals to me logically about a place like Greenlight is that, and I'm giving you a plug here, I'm going to come back to the curational thing, is that people will say, okay, if it's a Greenlight, it at least can't be awful. It must be pretty, right. You know, and there's so much stuff on streaming.
It goes back to that confusion and chaos that I talked about.
I was talking with my daughter about this yesterday about streaming films. She said, did you see this? Did you see that? And I'm saying, did you watch The Man in the High Castle? I said it was great for 6 episodes, and then it just jumped the shark. And,
right.
You know, or this film, you don't know. But if you go to Greenlight, it's most likely going to be something that Mike has thought about, read about.
That's the hope. The ultimate goal is to get there, right, where you are doing a sustainable number of tickets every week in a consistent manner, because either they know about the films or they trust our judgment and our curation.
Yeah.
That's the challenge of this, and we've done it in circumstances that have just been ridiculous, you know. But we're still here.
You're still here. It's fantastic. You know? The Catalyst, by the way, just celebrated 7 years, and
congratulations.
Thank you. And sometimes I feel like there's people out there that still don't even know we're here.
Yeah,
but I'm saying you can probably relate to that. But the people that do, I get a lot of great feedback, and
that's it.
That's cool.
It's funny because we talk about this a lot, like. Do we expand the marketing, right? And I'm at the point now where it's like I can go and boost stuff and, you know, social media and all that, but I'm chasing an audience that isn't going to come, right? Our audience is NPR, The New Yorker, The New York Times.
It's not the young Post, social media folks.
Tombolo Books, Book and Bottle, American Stage, Free Fall, that kind of more – I'm trying not to be a jerk, right? But like a more intellectual crowd.
Fail.
No. I know. I'm sorry. I love the entire audience.
The intellectual crowd. Let's not stereotype everybody.
But it's, you know what I mean? And so you could I can spend a lot of money on Facebook and Instagram chasing an audience. It's not going to come.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to come.
Because you're not showing Spider-Man 12.
Exactly.
And Captain America 19. And all
it's
that.
Better to be strategic and kind of go after those audiences and hope that you have. I mean, like, we're home for the Tampa Gay and Lesbian Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And like we're home now for Eugenie's studio, Tiglif, Tampa Gay and Lesbian, Hell on Heels, which is this group that does Rocky Horror every month.
I thought they did that there.
It's unbelievable. So I got to tell the story. So last Saturday, my projector goes out. Mm-hmm. I got a sold out show Saturday night.
Uh oh.
Still have the audio, but the lamp's blown. So I go to the guys, and Hell on Heels, there's like 12 or 15 kids. They're all dressed up.
I see where this is going.
Right?
Tell me the story.
So I go to them, and I said, I can't put anything on the screen. And they're like, just play the audio. I'm like, yes. So we play the audio. They do the whole film.
Was it cool?
It was totally cool. Everybody had a blast. Only 4 people wanted a refund. And they had a great time, right? So we're home for them. We're home now for Second Screen Cult Cinema out of Tampa and VHS Club. And those kind of local, community-based collaborations have been the best things that we've done. You really – to get there, and that takes time to kind of, you know, develop those things. And
I'm trying to picture Hell on Heels doing that at, one of, like, I don't really want to keep busting AMC's chops. So one of,
no, it's okay. Keep doing it.
I don't know. Cobb, do they still exist?
I think they changed names. Right?
Whatever. Regal. And anyway, but I can't imagine that happening.
Right.
In one of those places. Everybody be asking for their money. That's not what I'm paying for.
Right. And everyone was like, hey, kids, let's put on a show, you know? And they're throwing stuff, and it was awesome.
Very cool.
It was really great.
That's a great story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, and it was, and they didn't blink. I went to them and I said, yeah, I can't put it on the screen. They didn't blink. They're just like, play the audio. All right, let's do this.
All right.
Great night.
And they did the time warp again.
They did.
Hey, our guest today has been Mike Hazlett of Greenlight Cinema in St. Petersburg. Michael, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. If I could quickly make just one pitch for this weekend.
Yeah, I'll do that.
There's 2 films that you're going to love. These are right in your wheelhouse, okay? So Friday we're doing Sherlock Jr., which is the Buster Keaton film, and they've synced it with an REM album. So we're doing two screenings of that on Friday. And then I have this baseball film coming in called Ephus. Do you remember Bill Lee?
Oh, sure.
So Bill Lee threw the Ephus pitch, which is the kind of 20-mile-an-hour pitch. And this is a
Warren Zevon wrote a song about
called
it.
Called Bill Lee,
called
yes.
Bill Lee. I know exactly. That song very well, sure.
So this is a film, and it's kind of apropos. It's about a bunch of old guys who played like day baseball or, you know, weekend baseball, and their field is being destroyed. And it's the last game, and the Washington Post had a review this week that called it one of the best baseball films ever made.
Cool.
So I have that all weekend too.
Fantastic. And No Other Land starts.
And No Other Land is also
as
playing.
Well.
Yeah.
It's Greenlight Cinema. It is, what is it? Let's see if I got it. 221 Second Avenue North.
Absolutely.
Right across from American Stage, folks. Mike, thanks again for being here. We wish you, of course, continued success.
Thank you very much for having me. I love doing this kind of stuff.
We're glad you're here. Save some popcorn for me for next time.
Absolutely.
All right.